NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Today, I welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Generally, Susan joins us here on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise, and that's what we're all about here today on the program. So if you'd like to talk with Susan, give us a call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and she's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness. She's also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, the publisher Coach's Choice. You can find her on the web at www.eatandmove.com. That's EATNMOVE.com. And she has an office at Strawberry Fields in Urbana. Again, listeners, I welcome your questions about diet, nutrition, and exercise. 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222. 9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Good afternoon.
You well?
Doing pretty well. Have good. A little hoarse voice, but that's about it. It feels okay, though.
Okay. Well, as long as you're feeling good,
that's right.
That's important. We have a call coming in, and we're going to get to that person, I think, presently, rather than launch into a... I have a couple of questions for you this month, but since we've got a listener coming in, why don't we just get to this caller, our first caller on line one. Hi.
I have a question. I just start training for triathlon. Actually, I'm on the second week of training, and I also have a six-month-old son who I'm currently nursing. I heard about the lactic acid affecting the breast milk. Could you talk a little bit more about that? Thank you.
Well, I think certainly part of what we think about with lactic acid is it's thought of as kind of an acid buildup in the muscle. But some of that is related to a lot of things. In terms of training, if you're gradually training, working up to your training, and not doing too much too fast to where you're not getting a sore, then we know you don't build up as much lactic acid. And I don't know that I've ever actually seen a study that relates lactic acid and muscle buildup to whether that affects the breast milk and if that's a problem for the baby per se. I mean, theoretically, perhaps if you have more lactic acid built up and your milk might be a little bit more acidic, but I don't know that I've ever seen that being a real problem. But I would say the thing that you would want to do when you're training is to make sure, again, you're training at a pace that's really reasonable so that you're not injuring your muscle. You're not having a lot of muscle damage, because that's when we tend to see more of this lactic acid with recovery. If you're eating really well, that helps, obviously, if you're eating well. If you're staying really hydrated, it's a little bit harder to stay hydrated when you're nursing, and then it's pretty hard to stay hydrated when you're training. So really making a concerted effort to stay very, very hydrated, I think, is really important as well.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Charleston, line four. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. I had a couple questions here. I had heard someone talking regarding these fat-free salad dressings, that one was better off using the ones that weren't fat-free, and that the ones that aren't fat-free have more of the fats in it that are good for your body versus some of the other ads in the fat-free or not. And the other question I had was regarding the hydrogenated, like partially hydrogenated versus hydrogenated. And I understand partially is not good for you, but hydrogenated, I'm not sure about that. And those are my questions.
Okay. Good questions.
Yeah, when it comes to salad dressing, I think you're with a lot of people, and it's very confusing trying to find what would be considered the best salad dressing. Two things you want to think about. One of them is if calories are not a big issue for you. In other words, if you're maintaining weight, fine. If you're not trying to lose weight, certainly going with maybe a salad dressing that has more, particularly more olive oil or canola oil or some of these monounsaturated fats, which are good for the body. That's a fine place to get them. And so a lot of Italian dressings would be that type of fat. Certainly an oil and vinegar type salad dressing, again, would have more fat, but it's more olive oil. So that's a good type of fat to take in. And so if you're not concerned about a lot of extra calories, then that's a great place to get some extra fat. That's healthy fat. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Sometimes the creamier dressings, like some of the ranches or blue cheese or things like that, have more of this saturated fat, and we might see it as hydrogenated. Basically, if you look on a label and you see hydrogenated, that's generally when they've taken more of a liquid fat and made it a little bit more solid. You know, if you think, we always think of something like Crisco, the tub of Crisco, or if you think of margarine that's real hard in the stick, that's actually, they've taken fat and kind of hardened it by hydrogenating it. So if you see hydrogenated on a product or partially hydrogenated, that means that there has been some type of hardening that makes it a little bit more saturated, more difficult for your body to handle. We want to try to stay away from a lot of those extra fats, and that's why the basic oil is the better type to choose, particularly something like olive oil or canola that are, you know, generally more monounsaturated fats. And so that's what you want to look for on the label. Often you'll see trans fat free now, which means that they've taken out fats where they've sort of made them a little bit more hydrogenated. Or if it says no partially hydrogenated oils or no hydrogenated oils, that means, again, that they haven't done this hardening process, which may raise cholesterol as much or more as saturated fat that's naturally found in things like marbled meats. So if you're, again, if you're looking at salad dressings, I always say, you know, we usually don't get enough monounsaturated fat in the diet. That would be from things like, again, the olive oil, nuts, seeds, things like that, that are really this good type of fat. And so salad dressing, if you like something like oil and vinegar, that's a great place to get monounsaturated fat. You may cut down on your calories somewhere else, but I don't know that I'd cut it out in the fat category unless you're really trying to lose weight and you use a lot of salad dressing. Certainly I have clients who use a lot of salad dressing. If they used regular salad dressing, they'd get 500 or 600 or 700 or 800 more calories a day because they use so much. So in that case, using fat-free or something is more beneficial to them in terms of the overall calories.
Okay, and is partially hydrogenated less difficult for your body to deal with than hydrogenated?
Well, I don't think it really is. I mean, I think when you see the word hydrogenated, generally that's hardened to some extent. And of course, if it's partially hydrogenated, maybe not so much, but we know that the partially hydrogenated fats do raise cholesterol too. And so often there'll be a little bit of hydrogenated fat in something. You know, you'll look at some margarines and some will have some hydrogenated fat, but if you look, it's not very much saturated fat, and that's really the hard part. And so generally you're better off if the saturated fat is lower, maybe 0 or 1 gram, not very high, even if there is some partially hydrogenated way down in the label. If the first item on the label of something is partially hydrogenated oil, I would stay away from that product because then you know that's going to be pretty high in that type of fat that's not going to be good for you.
Yeah. And just to review, what's trans fat?
Trans fat is also another type of fat that in processing, generally it's changed a bit, and so it's more like a hydrogenated fat. And so that's where many people wanted to see trans fat on the label, which eventually, you know, coming up quite soon, actually next year or two, products will all have to have trans fat listed on the label because it's just another form of this type of fat that can raise blood cholesterol. But before it sort of was hidden, you didn't have to count it on the label.
Yeah, I think that new regulation takes effect in 2006,
mm-hmm.
but already you're seeing it on
right.
some labels now.
Exactly. A lot of companies are pretty much, you see that a lot, that it's trans fat free because people are looking for that now too.
Let's talk with another caller. In Indiana, line 4, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I was wondering, whatever media you can do it on, whether it's even VHS tape or DVD or radio or TV, or hopefully an article that's up on the web or something to address all these issues that, you know, you're already brought up on the program. In a sense, you know, if I had any common sense, I would have taped this, but I didn't do it. So I was wondering if there's a place where I can go to, or perhaps some book that's been published, where it gives you all the instances of what you actually should be doing with your diet and what isn't safe, really, and what's okay, even though it may have a similar name to what's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
That's a good question. A couple places I'd recommend. Certainly, we have new nutrition questions coming out all the time because things are changing. We're finding out more about nutrition, about what's out there and things. But I can give you a few resources that I think are really, really helpful and solid resources that have a lot of information. One of them, if you're looking online, a really good one, I think, is the International Food Information Council website. And that's a very simple one. It's just www.ific.org. So it's just ific.org. And they have questions to a lot of these, or answers to a lot of these questions about nutrition and different topics that you can look up and things. And they have a lot of dietitians working for them, many of whom I've worked with quite a bit on different projects. I think it's real solid. They're out in Washington, D.C. That would be a good place to kind of bookmark and have as a resource. Certainly, there are tons of nutrition websites. The Mayo Clinic often has, and I think that's just www.mayohealthaltogether.org, I think, or .com. But it's Mayo Health, and they have a lot of good kind of question and answers as well. Now, you know, one book that I use a lot that I find really helpful is out by the American Dietetic Association. And I'll give you that website as well. That's just www.eatright, all together, EATRIGHT.org. That's the American Dietetic Association. They're the governing body for dietitians. Basically, all dietitians are credentialed or, you know, through the ADA or go through ADA credential programs. But they've got a book out called The American Dietetic Association Complete Food and Nutrition Guide. And there's a second edition that was just out a couple years ago. In fact, I can get the date for you because I have it here. And that's a really good resource as well. This one was out in 2002. It's a pretty large book that really compiles a lot of information all about vitamins and minerals and different nutrients and cooking techniques and all kinds of things related to nutrition and really is set up in a really good format. And so that might be a good reference too, and I expect it'll be updated here in another year or two as well.
Also, since the gentleman has access to the web, all the programs that we do on the Afternoon Magazine and Focus 580 can be found on the web after the fact, so you don't have to worry about recording it. If you've got access to the web, you can just go to our website, will.uiuc.edu, and you can replay our program today.
Sure. I have a lot of listeners who will email me, too, with questions, and that's fine. So even after the show, if you want to email me a quick question and I can either answer it then or direct you somewhere that might be more appropriate if you're having a hard time finding the answer to something, too.
And the website to find Susan's email, www.eatandmove.com. Very good.
Great.
That's a good question. And, you know, one of the websites that I like to look at when ahead of a program that mm-hmm. I'm going to do with you is Tufts.
Sure.
University. They have a good, I don't know whether they have a great school there.
They do. They have an excellent, one of the best nutrition schools in the country.
Okay. And they Definitely. Also have a big medical school there,
mm-hmm.
too, as well.
Well, and they have a big research center. In fact, a lot of the research that comes out on aging and nutrition comes out of Tufts. And, in fact, Boston is where I did my internship. So long ago, 15 years ago or so, when I was just a training dietitian, I spent a year at Beth Israel Hospital in Boston. But we went to Tufts to do quite a bit of our training as well. So it was really interesting, all the work they had going on there in nutrition. And still, several of the top researchers in the country or many people that I look to find out what they're doing in research come out of Tufts. So it's a great resource as well.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Susan Kundrat is with us this afternoon. She's a registered dietitian. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and owner of Nutrition on the Move. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. You know, researchers over the last few years have been looking in depth into the chemicals in foods and their health benefits. And one of the foods drawing the interest of researchers is tea.
Mm-hmm.
Tea is something that Americans seem to be enjoying in greater numbers. Can mm-hmm. you talk with us a little bit about what the latest is in regards to tea?
Yeah, tea is one of those foods, or one of those drinks, I should say, that I think we really do want to keep an eye on, because it's something that is easy to consume, certainly calorie-free for the most part, so that's really helpful for people. And drinking tea on a consistent basis has been found to be beneficial in a lot of ways. And, you know, when we think about tea, I think one of the confusing things for people is really, what is tea, what isn't tea? And as we were talking about before the show, really when you think about what truly is tea, it's generally green tea, which green tea is tea that has not been oxidized. Basically, it's tea that hasn't been open to the air very much, and that's why it stays green. Or there's black tea that has been oxidized anywhere maybe from 2, 3, 4 hours, so it turns black. And then oolong tea is kind of in between, so it's somewhat oxidized. When you do have things like herbal teas, some of those are green or black tea with some herbs with them, but many of those teas are basically the herbs that are dried up and used as the tea, or the primary part of the tea. So those aren't necessarily green or black. They're more the herb themselves, which have their own beneficial properties as well. But most of the studies we see come out about tea and tea's benefit are either on green tea or black tea, or sometimes both. But what we're finding, and what researchers are finding, is that tea does contain a high amount of these antioxidants, which we've talked about before, which are really properties that can help repair damaged cells, properties that may keep our bodies healthy, things that can really be beneficial in our body in terms of prevention primarily, and that's mostly how they've been studied. And so the components, or the antioxidants that we generally think of in tea, are called polyphenols, which are a type of antioxidant. You may see things like, particularly a lot of supplements, you'll see green tea supplement called EGCG, which is a particular type of polyphenol, or a particular type of antioxidant that's potent, particularly in green teas, that's been found to be beneficial too. So you might see green tea, you might see black tea, you might see some of these particular antioxidants that are noted in things. But when I compare teas to even a lot of different fruits and vegetables in terms of how much antioxidants they have and how potent they are, tea ranks up there pretty mm-hmm. well with a lot of different studies.
Yeah. Well, one of the things tea is so prized for is its ability to make us feel good, or to calm us down.
Mm-hmm.
What's at work there?
Well, some of that might be the fact that it's a warm liquid. I don't know. And more the psychological benefit of tea itself, too. I don't know that the antioxidants themselves necessarily have a calming effect, but they certainly might as well. But I also think when we're drinking something that we can get the aroma from, it's kind of like chicken soup. You know, that really there have been some studies that chicken soup might help with immunity and help you if you have a cold and help you get over it. Well, whether or not it's something really in that soup, maybe, but it's also maybe the process of eating that soup that is beneficial, and it's warm steam and everything too. So, you know, especially when you think if you have a cold, or particularly if you have a cold, though, it's so important to stay hydrated. So just getting over something is maybe more beneficial if you drink a lot of tea, because you stay more hydrated. And certainly if it's steaming, that's good, because you might breathe in some of that steam, which is beneficial as well. So I think besides the components of tea, there are probably a lot of reasons that people may feel better.
Yeah. And it can smell so wonderful.
Right.
So lots of different things going on there in a cup of tea. Let's talk with another caller, a listener in Chicago. Line 4, hi.
Hi. I'd like to know if you have an opinion on ready-to-eat breakfast cereals, the ones you put milk in. I know some of them are rice, some are corn, some are bran. Lots of sugar and dried raisins. So do any of them have any nutrition or value?
Well, sure. A lot of the ready-to-eat cereals are really helpful in terms, particularly in terms of meeting your fiber quotient. Now, of course, you can choose a lot of cereals that are not very high in fiber, that are mostly refined sugar. And, you know, you think a lot of the kids' cereals that are out there. And
yeah.
I have a 3-year-old who's now learning about things like Apple Jacks, which, you know, we don't have a lot around home, but she certainly tasted them, so she has kind of an idea about those now, and those are a little different than, let's say, some of the more high-fiber cereals. But the biggest thing I look for in a cereal is look, you know, going down the list of the ingredient list on the side and also going down the nutrition label, first thing I look for in cereal is fiber. Because what you really want, if you're trying to get some nutritional value out of a cereal, you want something preferably with 5, 6, 7 grams of fiber, but maybe even a few grams of fiber is good. But what that's meaning is that you're getting something that's more whole grain. And if you look again at the label, you might find that the first ingredient on the label is a whole grain, maybe a whole oat or a whole wheat or a whole rice or something like that. And certainly we have cereals that are up to 15 grams of fiber per serving, which our goal for the day really is about 25 to 35 per day. So that can be a great start in terms of your whole grain and your fiber to help with, you know, relieving constipation, just keeping your system moving appropriately too. So that's one thing you definitely look for. If you look for sugars on there too, that's the second thing you can look at. And it's important to keep in mind when you look at sugars that about 4 grams of sugar is a teaspoon. So there will be cereals with a cup that maybe have 20 grams of sugar, and that equates to 5 teaspoons of sugar in just one serving. That's a lot. But others might have only 3 or 4, maybe even less. So looking at fiber and sugar can tell you a lot about a cereal right away.
Corn and rice, do they have any food value there? In that?
Sure, they do too, because you can certainly get, again, the more natural the cereals, like, you know, I think one example, something like Corn Bran that's got corn in it, it's got wheat in it, and among other things, and I think that's maybe 5 or 6 grams of fiber, but it's one that tastes a little better because it might have a little more sugar, but at the same time, it's got corn fiber and wheat fiber and some of these other things in it. So there are definite benefits. You know, another one you'd think of is oats. Of course, natural oat cereal, like oatmeal, regular plain oatmeal without anything in it, is just basically whole grain oats. That it's got some natural sugars. It's also got quite a bit of natural fiber that's more this gummy type of fiber, which is good for you. And so the more natural, the better in terms of the cereals that you can get. I mean, I certainly, you know, have a lot of clients or athletes I work with who are so addicted to sugared cereal that one thing we try to do is have them mix half and half. In other words, even something as simple as mixing Cheerios with Honey Nut Cheerios half and half, or, you know, so maybe they're not getting as much sugar, might get a little bit more whole grain. Mixing Wheaties with Frosted Flakes, for example. You know, most people, it tastes okay if they go half with the sugar because they really don't need all that. And so that's a way to kind of move into the realm of having it be a much healthier thing that you eat.
You can't recommend any brand or type, though, over the air, can you?
Well, not necessarily.
Like Wheaties or...
Yeah, I mean, there are so many good ones, and just like there are so many that are real high in sugar. And that's what I would. That's where I would look at the labels. And, again, the first thing that I look at all the time is fiber, because
right.
If I'm seeing a higher fiber cereal, I'm knowing that it's going to give me some benefit with that too. And then, like you mentioned, some things have a lot more added sugar or those kinds of things. You know, one place you might want to look, a newsletter that comes out that does these types of things where they rank all kinds of brands of different cereals and frozen foods and things like that is called Nutrition Action Health Letter.
Where do you find that?
That's actually put out by the Center for Science in the Public Interest, and you could search that, but I believe that website is www.cspinet.org.
All right.
I'm not totally sure on that, but if you would just even, you know, if you're online and you could search Nutrition Action Health Letter, that's the name of that newsletter, and it's put out I think 10 times a year. It's a really good newsletter that I get that actually does list down what you're looking for. They call them their best bites, you know, what they look for, things lower in sugar, higher in fiber, more natural, things like that. And then it might give you 20 best bites that you could think, okay, I'm going to choose from some of these, and these would be better choices.
That's it. All right, then, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I think we had a call about cereal not too long ago, maybe a couple of shows back, and I suggested that often in the store, in that cereal aisle, the store will have labeled cereals that are eligible for the WIC program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generally a pretty good tip-off that it's a pretty good cereal because those are products that have been okayed by the federal government for food stamps.
Right, right. That's a good point. And so that would be a good place to start looking at those, too.
Yeah, because there's so many. Sugar. That aisle is so long.
It is.
You know what? Next time I'm at the store, I'm going to check this. You mentioned your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if the most sugary cereals are at kid eye level. What do you think?
Well, they are, I believe, yeah. And in fact, when we've looked through, you know, gone through the aisles, it is very obvious with the marketing. And, you know, we just actually, I have to admit that during the basketball season, I have to get full cable because I always want to see all the college basketball games. So we now have cable again this time of year. And it's interesting, too, because now we watch a little more of the kids' shows in the morning or something like that. And it is amazing just the marketing at that time, too. And just there aren't very many things that are healthy that are marketed.
Last week on the program, I had a sociologist on the program by the name of Juliet Shore. And she's written a couple of books about marketing. And one of her latest is Born to Buy.
Mm.
And she talks about, in that book, she talks about how you are being marketed in one way by a cereal company, but they've also got an ad campaign just designed for your daughter and her friends. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Normal, line 4. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I had wanted to know about things you could do with your diet for cholesterol, just in general, to lower cholesterol and to improve the HDL-LDL ratios.
Okay. Well, there's a couple things we look at in terms of when you're kind of combating cholesterol. One of them is to bring down the saturated fat in your diet. We know that a diet that's lower in saturated fat can help in terms of cardiovascular health. So that's where we look at things like, are you eating many fried foods? Are you eating a lot of things with extra fat added? We were talking a little earlier about hydrogenated products. You know, sometimes a lot of cookies and crackers and things will have more fat added to them that also contain a lot of this maybe saturated fat that can raise blood cholesterol levels. And so looking at different types of meats that you're eating. Are you eating fried chicken versus a grilled chicken breast? Things like that, whereas the plain meats obviously are going to be better choices. In those ways too. Are you adding a lot of extra butter, adding a lot of extra fat? So the fat component is one of the places we really look. And then the other thing is what can you add? Not what can you take away from your diet, but what can you add that may help bring down lipids? And those are things like particular fibers like beans. I mean, something as simple as vegetarian pork and beans that don't actually have the fat pieces in them, but they're real high in fiber. Beans are extremely beneficial in terms of being high in this type of gummy fiber that may bring down blood lipids in some people. Oatmeal, adding oats to your diet. We talked a little bit ago about cereals and fiber content. Some people shy away from oatmeal because they find that, the fiber's not quite as high as something like All Bran. But if you're looking at cholesterol reduction, you want more of this gummy type of fiber like oatmeal, because that's the type more so than a wheat bran that may help bring down cholesterol levels. So we look at that. We look at other things in terms of how to keep your arteries healthy. We were mentioning tea earlier, and tea has some of these antioxidants that in some studies on tea and cardiovascular disease, some researchers feel that, you know, it may be these antioxidants in tea that help keep your arteries better off and maybe your platelets from collecting on the sides of the arteries to prevent cardiovascular problems. Things like grape juice, Concord grape juice, that tend to keep your platelets less sticky as well and maybe help your arteries. And so there are foods that you can add that also are beneficial in terms of cardiovascular health. And usually they're things like more fruits and vegetables and more high fiber, particularly these gummy types of fiber. So you kind of look at it from both angles. You know, when I meet with somebody, we look at the fat and the saturated fat and then adding more good fat, nuts, seeds, olive oil, things like that that may be protective as well and actually may bring down lipid levels. Fatty fish like salmon and tuna and those kinds of things as well.
Some ideas there?
Okay. Yeah.
You want to follow up or?
I had heard something about, maybe it was just about soy and heart, but does soy soy protein do anything to help lipid levels? And I also was wondering about alcohol.
Right. Well, when you look at soybeans, certainly soy particularly soy protein, has been definitely researched to help bring down lipid levels. It may not come down as much as we first thought from some of the research that came out earlier, but certainly that can be a beneficial component too. Generally, we think of 25 grams of soy protein a day, which is the kind of the national recommendation for cardiovascular health. So looking at that too, and some of the benefit of soy might be the fact that it's a bean as well as other beans, and the beneficial factor there along with isoflavones and other things besides the protein. So that's important too. And the last thing you mentioned?
Alcohol,
yes, of course. Certainly a lot of studies, particularly epidemiological studies, have found that people, if they have what we consider moderate alcohol intake, one drink a day for women, maybe one to two drinks a day for men, may help decrease your risk of cardiovascular disease. Now, it does increase your risk of certain cancers, but it does tend to decrease your risk. It may keep lipids at bay a little bit better. The general recommendation there is if you don't drink, probably don't start. But if you do drink, then maybe consider that moderate level. There may be some additional benefit from red wine because, again, it has more of these antioxidants as well as the alcohol itself. But some of that benefit appears to be just in the alcohol itself.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's talk with a listener in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I've been trying really hard to cut all partially hydrogenated oils from my diet, and I found it very difficult because I can't even find a cracker at the supermarket that doesn't contain partially hydrogenated oils, and I'm wondering if I'm wasting my time if I can't cut them all out or if I can just cut them down as much as I can. Is that still a benefit?
Well, certainly my recommendation as a dietitian, because I, of course, my background is all in trying to enjoy food as well as eating healthy, and I don't believe you necessarily have to cut them all out. I think that what you want to try to do is find most products that either don't have it in there or have very little hydrogenated fat. You know, and if you look, again, if you look at a product like a cracker and the total fat is only 1 or 2 grams in that cracker, even if there's a little bit of partially hydrogenated fat, it's not going to be very much. And so that's one thing you want to look at, too, is what the actual label says, because it's really the total amount that's more problematic. So if you have something like a crisp cracker that's a rye crisp or a wheat crisp or something like that, and the total fat is very low, even if it has a tiny bit of hydrogenated fat, but it's only a gram or something, I wouldn't worry about that a bit because that's not going to really be significant. So looking at, when you look at processed foods, that can be really helpful to look at the total grams of fat as well. And then you can kind of assess whether a little bit of hydrogenated fat is very reasonable for that.
And isn't hydrogenated fat also have a lot of trans fats, or is that something different?
Well, again, it's kind of confusing because I think of them as really one and the same. I mean, they may be a little different in terms of how they're labeled. It has been that hydrogenated fat has had to be on the label, but we haven't had to use trans fat, which is another type of fat, again, that is more saturated. But soon that will be on the label as well. But basically what you're looking for, if you look under total fat and you look at the next part where it'll say whether there's saturated fat or not, if there is saturated fat, then our concern is, well, is it hydrogenated? Is it not? How much saturated fat is that? Because all that may not be as healthy, you know, as unsaturated fat. So whether that's trans or hydrogenated, whatever that is, may not be as healthy for you. But again, if the total amount is not very high, then probably that risk is pretty low, whether it's trans or hydrogenated or whatever it is.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk with another listener on line two now. Good afternoon.
Yes, hello. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about astragalus.
Okay.
Astragalus. I've just read a little bit about it, but I don't really know what people think about it. I'm really curious as to what you think and how people take it.
Right. Astragalus is an herb that is often kind of lumped into the herbs for immune health or the types of things that you can do to keep your immunity strong. And so you might read more about astragalus now because if you're reading more things about how to keep colds at bay and how to stay healthy during the winter and all those kinds of things, astragalus is often included with echinacea and some other types of herbs. And astragalus is basically even kind of in general thought with immune health, it's really in there as part of the things that you may want to do. I'm mostly familiar with it in tea form, and that's how I've used it primarily is infused in a tea and consumed a couple times a day for basic maintaining healthy immunity. And so that's usually what it's thought of. Certainly might have other properties as well. But I was recently looking up some things from Andrew Weil, Dr. Weil, and and looking at kind of his overall recommendations for immunity and immune health and things too. And by and large, he always, you know, recommends astragalus as one type of herb that can be helpful as well. And I know you can take it in other formats as well, but I think the most commonly used way to take it in is in a tea form.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Other calls are invited. No one's waiting at the moment. We have about 10 minutes left in this portion of the afternoon magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat, owner of Nutrition on the Move. This is the afternoon magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. The numbers, if you'd like to join us this afternoon, if you'd like to talk with Susan, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. We had a call or two back about cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was last spring or last summer, news on the, this might have even made the front page,
mm-hmm.
that people with who consume diets containing the recommended dietary allowance of calcium have lower body weights and lower body fat. And this is calcium from foods.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, you don't get the same benefit from supplements. What's the RDA for calcium? And can you kind of recall with us what that story was about and what is the hypothesis for why this happens?
Well, I think there's a lot that researchers still don't know about calcium, but from certainly from what I understand, there, you know, we've always looked at calcium and bone health. And I think what some researchers began to do not too long ago is kind of go back through those studies and see if there were any other correlations. And so it appeared from a lot of these studies that those with higher calcium intakes also had lower percent body fat and were maybe weighed less, but also particularly, you know, looking at lower body fat, and that may be helpful. And so whether calcium works as a regulatory, you know, mineral that may help with keeping your body fat low or keeping weight down, you know, I'm not sure what that actually is, but kind of general recommendation, you may see this on a lot of products now, things that'll say, oh, helpful for weight loss, like yogurt or something like that, because it contains calcium. And there are a couple of researchers over at Purdue University who I've talked to about this issue before. And last time I talked to one of them, she said that we really don't know that much. You know, we're still learning. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to now do some real proactive studies to find out what that's all about. But, you know, calcium has really been a key nutrient. I mean, it's come forth in a lot of studies being helpful with hypertension, you know.
Yeah, blood pressure, right.
Exactly. And so there are a lot of good reasons besides keeping strong bones and teeth to make sure that, you know, you have your calcium in your diet. And I do think that most of the early studies really didn't look at calcium supplementation. They looked more at calcium in food, and that's why we know more about maybe the benefits of calcium in food versus calcium supplementation in some of these areas. Not to say that supplements won't help as much, but maybe we don't know as much about them.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at the recommended intake, you know, it's anywhere from about 1,000 milligrams a day up to 1,500 milligrams a day. That's going to be maybe 3, 4, in some cases 5 servings of a high calcium food a day. And my experience is many people don't come near to that unless they really think about it. I mean, they might think, oh, I have milk on my cereal. That's typically what I hear. I have milk on my cereal, and I might have a slice of cheese or yogurt or glass of milk some other time in the day. Probably you're not anywhere close to meeting those needs, in which case you got to either think about how can we change the diet or maybe add a 500 milligram calcium supplement to that too.
It's really interesting that we know a fair amount about the chemical composition of foods, but you know, we're really just beginning to probe how it's digested and how the body absorbs it and how it all works.
Exactly. And I think that's such an interesting area. Nutrition is how are things utilized in the body? And of course, we're finding out more and more about the differences in different people. You know, different people utilize foods differently. I think, you know, to get back, just make one more comment about the man who called about cardiovascular and keeping down his cholesterol. You know, I think one key thing to do, because there is so much kind of confusion about food and people get, you know, maybe do something for a while and then they don't do that anymore and these kinds of things. That's why I think it's so helpful, you know, to make sure that you get a solid nutrition plan and meet with a dietitian in your area or meet with somebody so you can really get a hold of these things. Something like cholesterol it's not just a low-fat diet. You know, same thing with hypertension. It's not just cutting the salt out of the diet. We know a lot of things from certain reviews that have really been helpful on how you put foods together and other things you can do. So I think it's really important to get a solid plan.
Well, let's talk with some more listeners. First, we go to a caller on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Yes, hello. I don't bake cookies terribly often anymore, but when I do, I'm always kind of puzzled as to what type of shortening I should use that, you know, is healthy and yet, you know, turns out a decent product. And I was wondering if our guest knew anything that she could recommend.
Okay, great question. This time of year, a lot of people making cookies.
That's a big question this time of year. Well, there's two ways you can look at it. One thing is to say, because a lot of the very lower fat margarines, what they do is they whip those up and then add water to them. And so, as you mentioned, they may not make a very good product, and that's a problem. So, you know, there are some things you can try doing that might combat that a little bit. For instance, if you used a margarine that would be whipped in a tub. You know, there are many of them that aren't stick but are tub margarines. Again, they're lower in fat. You'll notice they're lower in saturated fat. If you use that as a replacement but also added something else that might help make a difference with what you're losing out with regular margarine. For instance, maybe use the tub margarine and you added some extra applesauce for some that gives it a little bit more consistency. That might be helpful. Or, you know, we have things like prune purees that are out there that can be helpful when you cut the fat down. What I find is if you just substitute a very low-fat margarine for the margarine or butter you'd normally use, the product isn't quite the same and maybe doesn't even stick together very well, but you might have to add something else in there. Sometimes I'll also add extra yogurt because, again, some of that water in there kind of evaporates off, but if you got yogurt, that maybe is helpful as well. But the other thing I would look at doing is I would kind of make a, you know, you could certainly do a compromise where you might typically use Crisco or use butter. You might use a lower fat margarine still in the stick. It's still somewhat hydrogenated, maybe not as much fat. Or you might use the actual butter or margarine or Crisco, use a little bit less of that product, and then again, maybe add some yogurt or applesauce or something that might help with the consistency. So you're still using the same product, but a little bit less of it. You know, I like to bake too, and it seems that it's sort of trial and error with what I've found being beneficial.
Yeah. Or butter.
Right. Or you can think of using
just
part
don't
butter.
Have as many cookies.
Yeah.
Just, but butter makes it taste
Butter good. Makes good, yeah.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign, line two. Hi. Line two, listener in Champaign.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. You were talking about tea, and when I hear that mentioned, they usually say green tea. And I drink about a half gallon or more of iced tea every day. It's always dark. I don't know if it helps, but does it do any harm?
Well, when you think about tea, and we didn't kind of cover this totally because we didn't have as much time, but green tea generally has some more antioxidants compared to black tea, but black tea is also very helpful.
Iced tea is?
Well, the black tea itself. It's mostly studied with hot tea.
Yeah.
But there's reason to believe that iced tea is going to give you some of those compounds too. And so I would say it's a great thing to consume because it's going to have some of the antioxidants too.
And well, that's encouraging.
Yes.
Because I drink a lot of it. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. And we have a question from somebody who couldn't hang on the line with us. Buttermilk, is it better nutritionally than regular milk?
Well, it's very similar nutritionally, but for a lot of people, it's a little bit easier to digest. And so when you think of it that way, it could be a little more beneficial there, too. But most buttermilk is often a skim milk or a low-fat milk product. And so when you're thinking about the fat content and things like that, you might use that in baking and it adds a little, you know, different flavor and things. And yet, generally, if it's a skim or 1% product, it's not going to add a lot of extra fat.
I remember being really surprised as a kid to learn that it was lower fat.
Yeah.
Then because it's butter, you know, buttermilk.
Right, exactly.
All, right? Well, that'll do it for another month.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Really enjoyed it.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll see you in January.
Sounds wonderful.
Very good. Susan Kundrat has been our guest this afternoon here on The Afternoon Magazine. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. She's the owner of Nutrition on the Move. You'll find her on the web at www.eatandmove. That's eatandmove.com. It's 10 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks, Celeste. On this rather dreary Monday afternoon, futures in the Board of Trade decided to finish the day a bit higher in the wheat, the corn, and the bean pit. We'll get to all those numbers momentarily. Don't forget to stay with us until 6 after the hour, 2 o'clock, and at least after that as well, as we head through the closing market report Central Time this afternoon. We'll talk with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois, about all the action at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, how he thinks things might play out over the next couple of weeks as we head into the new year, into the last month here of 2004. Now, December wheat futures for the day, up 2 cents. I had a high of 296 and a low of 292.5. Their settlement price today, $2.93. Once again, they were up 2 in the December contract at the Board of Trade. The March soft red winter wheat, a 308 high, low at 304.25. Settlement price, 305.5, and they were up 1. May futures up 1.2. They were at 314.75 on the high, the low at 311.5. A settlement price, 312 even. Once again, that May contract settled 1 cent higher. July futures at 321 high, low at 318.25. Settlement price, 318.5, up 1 for the day. And the September contract, 327.5 on the high, the low at 326, settled on that low. They still finished the day 2 cents higher. December corn futures now 198.75 on the high, the low at 197.5. Settlement price at 197.75. They were a penny and a half higher for the day. The March contract, 209.5 high, low at 208.25. A settlement price at 209 even, up a penny and 3/4. May futures, a penny and a half higher today, 217 the high, the low at 15.75, and a settlement price at 216.5. July contract in the corn pit, $2.24.25 the high, the low at 223, settled 223.75, up 1.75. And the September futures, 231.75 the high, the low at 230.25, settlement price there, 231.25, and they finished a penny and 3/4 higher. The December contract for next year, 240 the high, the low at 238.75. A settlement for the red December contract, 239.25, up 1.25. Dees oats for the day, 168 the high, the low at 165.5. Settlement price at 168, up a penny and a half. The March contract, 159.75, the high, the low at 157. Settlement price at 158.25, down 1 for the day. January contract in the bean pit, 533.75, the high, the low at 526. Settlement price at 529.75, up 4 cents. And the March futures, 537, the high, the low at 530. Settlement price at 534, up 4.25. May contract in the bean pit, 543.5, the high, the low at 538. Settlement price at 539.75, up 3.75. And July futures, 551 high, low at 545, settlement price at 547.75, up 3.25. August soybeans, 553.5 high, low at 550.75, settled at 550.75, up 2.75 for the day. And the September contract did not trade for the day. Once again, they did not trade. Their settlement price still at 551.5, up 3.5. November futures, 3.5 cents higher. And they tend to hide today at 566, a low at 562, settlement price at 562.75, up 3.5 of the day. December bean meal, 158.50, the high, the low at 155.70, settlement price at 158.40, up 410, and the January contract at 159.50 high, low at 156 even, settlement price at 159.30, they were up 410. December oil, 20.54, the high, the low at 20.11, settled 20.18, down 23, and the January bean oil, 20.53, the high, the low at 20.11, settlement price at 20.18, they were down 22. Want to go back and check one extra number for you, that September bean contract I told you did not trade. Of course, that's not true, because they were up 3.5 cents on the day. They had to trade at some point. We simply do not have the high and the low on that. The settlement price, once again, at 551.5. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Thank you, Todd. It was a lower day today for lean hogs and bellies. They were down the limit. And feeder cattle were mixed. Live cattle finished higher today. January feeder cattle, the high $101.75, the low $100.62.5, finishing today at $101.40, down 50. March feeder cattle, $97.90, the high $96.70, the low $97.82.5, the settlement, that up 32.5. April, $96.25, the high $95.25, the low, the settlement $96.05, up 25. December live cattle, $87.50, the high $86.70, the low $87.47.5, the settlement. that up 17.5. February, 87.95, the high, 86.82.5, the low, 87.90, the settlement, that up 32.5. December, lean hogs. Today's high, 77.95, the low, 76.50, that also the settlement, 76.50, down $2, down the limit. February, 74.85, the high, 73.32.5, the low and settlement, that down $2. April, 72.10, the high, 70.67.5, the low and settlement, down the limit. May, 71 even, the high, 69.80, the low and settlement, that down the limit, down $2. February, pork bellies, 99.70, the high, 96.85, the low and settlement, that down the limit, down $3. The Dow is currently off 25 points at 10,567. The NASDAQ, 7 higher at 21.55. And the S&P 500 now in positive territory by a fraction. It stands at 11.92. And January Brent crude, 39.65. Today's settlement, that up 29.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Verde Gallery, featuring indelible impressions, paintings by Charu Khan and ceramics by Rimas Vizcarda. Artist reception on Thursday, December 9th at 7 p.m. Verde carries a wide selection of handmade items suitable for the holidays. Verde Gallery, a fine art gallery, cafe, and newsroom at 17 East Taylor, downtown Champaign. On the web at verdant-systems.com. Be inspired.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Mrs. Omar from Bangor, Maine wants to know, Dear Dr. Science, last week at Thursday's bridge game, I opened one spade and my partner responded one no trump. I bid three diamonds and my partner passed. What kind of partner is this?
Well, Mrs. Omar, I'm afraid you asked a question science can't answer. For one thing, this is not a bridge column. This is a radio program about science. For another thing, bridge is a game of chance. Nothing scientific about it at all. All card games, with the exception of poker, are games of chance. If you're looking for advice, I'd recommend either seeking a new partner, divorce if the partner is your husband, or finding something new to do on Thursday nights.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath and distributed by PRI Public Radio International. To order the Duck's Breath CD pack, including Dr. Science's new Get Smart disc, the new Best of Duck's Breath collection, and the new Ian Scholes compilation, I Gotta Go, three CDs for $32.95 postpaid, call 800-989-3825.
1 minute before 2 o'clock Central Time. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. The producer for the program, Harriet Williamson, our technical director.